Welcome to How to Trade It, the road to trading mastery. Join Casey Stubbs, a seasoned trader, as he guides you to become a profitable trader. Find actionable insights, real life stories, and strategies to boost your trading skills. Don't miss the journey to trading victory. Start listening now. Connect with us at podcast@tradingstrategyguides.com. Trading profits are just an episode away.
This is Casey Stubbs from the How to Trade It podcast. And today we have a new episode. And today I'm going to be interviewing, I have the great pleasure to interview Guy Cohen, the founder and CEO of Wise Traders. Guy is a very accomplished trader, a true professional, and I've known Guy for a very long time. You guys are in for a great treat today. Guy, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Casey. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have you. We've known each other for a long time, and it's good to get you on this show because I know that you are one of the best traders that's out there teaching education, because there's a lot of characters in this industry, and you happen to be the real deal and such a great track record. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got started in trading.
Well, Casey, I'm a little older than you. I'm 51, and I got started. I got the bug sort of around 20, 21, when I was legally allowed to do something. And it was a very naive piece of naive thing that I did. I saw there was a famous stadium in the UK called Wembley. And Wembley was a public company, and you could trade Wembley PLC shares. And so my view was, at that stage in my career, it's a stadium. It's always getting full. What could go wrong? So I bought some Wembley shares. That was my introduction to it. I was always good with numbers, and I was always interested in numbers. But my first trade was in Wembley PLC. And I think over the period of about 18 months or so that I held those shares, it kind of bumbled around and didn't do very much. And I kind of broke even. But that was, you know, as you could see, there was a lot of work to do from that initial bit of analysis. It's a stadium. What can go wrong?
It makes sense. Whenever I go to a stadium, I'm looking at the crowd and I'm trying to think of how much money they're making. Like, I'm like, okay, they got hot dogs. They're selling drinks for $10. You know, I'm like, these guys are raking in the money. My entrepreneurial mind is always thinking that way.
Exactly. Now, in nowadays, much more than it was in those days, remember, because that's, you know, you're talking about 1992. Stadiums are different gravy now than they were in 1992.
That is for sure. Everything's cost so much more. You got to basically be the greatest trader in the world to afford to go to the athletic event.
Now, I mean, a stadium now is an entertainment thing. You don't just go and watch the game and eat hot dogs. You get the full, you know, cordon bleu experience now.
So did they do soccer?
Well, it was the National Stadium. It still is, but they've rebuilt it. They rebuilt it for many, many hundreds of millions of pounds or dollars. And now the company, I don't think exists in its existing state, but in its previous state rather. But yes, it was just one of those things. I like sport. Here was a sporting company. What could go wrong? And they also held concerts as well. And I'd been to a Billy Joel concert in one of the Wembley complexes. So, you know, that was my analysis. So, well, I didn't realize how far I had to go, but that was the beginning.
Baby steps. So you weren't trading full time in the beginning. What did you do then?
Well, my first career was actually in real estate. So I went into real estate, but my appreciation of finance is that many people who are good in real estate aren't very good with numbers, ironically. So at the same time as getting my qualifications in real estate in the early 90s, I was also getting my qualifications on our equivalent of Wall Street as well. So I was doing two things at the same time. And I got both those qualifications, you know, by the middle 1990s. And then from one reason or another, well, I mean, I got a nasty illness and blah, blah. But then I took a finance MBA. And that finance MBA took me into the world of options, because I took the most difficult electives. The most difficult one was options. and you try doing options from an academic perspective, that again, a different story. And that's how I really got into it. And then I, you know, by the time we're into the mid to late 1990s, now with this academic background that I had, I was looking for software for options analytics. I just didn't like any of that out there. I don't know whether you remember what was going on in your early 20s with options applications, but they weren't very good. And so I started building my own, and that was, and then I was in.
Yeah, I can see how, just knowing you, I can see how you would find nothing that would work. It had to be exactly the way you wanted it to be. I can see that for sure.
Yeah, even then, that was the beginning of the journey as well. I still didn't realize how long and winding the journey would be.
Yeah, and you're still doing that with your software. It's like, okay, I got to fix this, update this, improve this.
Put it this way, had I known, I'd have stuck in real estate.
Yeah, well, it's been good for you and for a lot of other people. So, so out of that, you discovered some pretty interesting things in the way that stocks move. What were some of the big early discoveries that really got your interest and got you excited about trading stocks?
Well, first of all, stocks are understandable. So from even for the layperson, you understand you've got a unit of ownership in a company. If that company performs better than expectations, those shares are going to go up. If it performs less than expectations, the shares are going to go down. So from just an intuitive point of view, trading stocks was very easy to understand. Then it's a question of, you know, movement. So of course, you know, doing an MBA, you're going to be reading all about Warren Buffett, even in those days. And I got into all that kind of, those kind of techniques, but I wanted something a little faster than that. And I started to look around. I was, you know, in the early stages, I wasn't at the algorithm level, but what I did understand pretty quickly was risk control. So, you know, I want to know a place where I'm going to enter a trade, and I must know a place where I'm going to exit if it's going to go bad. And that's what I learned very quickly. So very early days with my trading career, I leaned towards consolidations. Now, it's really important that everyone understands from an empirical point of view, there's no magic, or very rarely any magic, with consolidations other than risk control. You know where you enter, maybe above the flag, and you know where your stop is, the other side of the flag, in most cases. And so risk control is a huge part of trading, as you know. And luckily, I started with that, knowing that that was a key component. Now, all the other stuff, like where do you take profits? How do you protect profits? That came later. And then what kind of consolidations? Because it's not just any old consolidation that works. You can't just do a blanket, which consolidations work better than anything else, because you're not going to get good results. That I can show you with real stats. So you then start thinking, well, okay, I like these consolidations, but now I've got to figure out which ones are going to be better than other ones. And so that was a whole new level of research that had to happen. But this was way before, you know, any kind of serious algorithm started happening with me, and certainly before the one that's made me quite well known.
Okay, well, that's a great point to just emphasize, because I think people that are learning to trade or have not been successful right now could take two of those key points, which would be risk control and consolidations. And, you know, they're great together, because consolidations allow you to really keep your risk very small, because you have a very short distance from where you can place an exit point, which I think is really good. Now, as you were getting more control of your risk and building up these trainings, what did you discover about how markets move and what really makes a stock move for a long period of time?
Well, that's a very big question. It's a very good question. What makes a stock move for a long period of time is, of course, perpetually beating expectations, perpetually being ahead of Wall Street and the analysts. Now, the companies that tend to do that in the most dramatic way tend to be tech companies. So, you know, we gravitate to those early and middle stage tech companies. Now, once a tech company becomes too big or too mature, most of them level off. Obviously, there are exceptions like Microsoft, like Apple, of course, and Facebook, etc. But, you know, traditionally, once a company achieved, you know, extraordinary value, it's very difficult for them to keep growing. And once a company stops growing, then the share price will not only stall, but it'll typically go down because the multiple that's attached to that will also fall. So there's an awful lot of things that go into, you know, evaluating what a share price could and should be at any one point in time. But what I discovered is that I wasn't that interested in that. What I was interested in was momentum. And I don't just say that word lightly, but what was also causing the momentum, what causes momentum is imbalances of demand and supply in terms of the trading. And so I gravitated to analysis that could show me whether a stock price was under pressure, either from, you know, from upwards or from downwards. And I started to gravitate to that form of analysis because ultimately, if a stock or if a company is performing well and analysts are liking it or the public is liking it or institutions are liking it, it's going to force pressure one way or another via demand and supply. There's going to be more demand for the shares. You're going to see that somewhere, whether it's with volume or something else. And what I was determined to look for was not just volume, but that something else. And given the options expertise that I had by then, I started to look at options data. And that, you know, swimming in ugly, dirty options data gave me the clues that then enabled me to create the indicator that I created. And that had the real empirical juice.
Okay. I think I'm following a little bit. There's quite a bit in that answer.
I'll summarize. I don't now look at company reports or anything like that. And you know, because that's too slow, what I look at is imbalances that where I can see from a chart that there is likely demand supply pressures exerting in one way or another. And that's all I'm interested in now in a chart.
Okay. I think I understand the supply and demand concept. I've dived down that quite a bit. And it's basically that, you know, it's the classic law of supply and demand. It's what you've found in nature, right?
That's exactly it.
It's a law that's always true and it always will be true, which is why we're seeing prices go up so dramatically on everything right now. So I understand that. But what I don't understand is how you can see that A, on a chart, and B, how you can see it with options data.
Hello, this is Casey, and I wanted to take a minute to tell you about my new book that just came out. It's called Complete Trading System. This is my 25 years of trading experience, sharing everything that I have learned in how to make a profit from the markets. You're going to learn about how to find the right instruments to trade, how to find a trend, how to get started as beginners. You're going to learn about how to get the right mindset, and you're going to be able to put it all together to create a trading system of your own that will work for you. I highly recommend that you try it out. Just click the link right now. It's called Complete Trading System. It's available on Amazon. Thank you. Go ahead and check it out. I think you're going to love it.
One thing at a time. Okay, so I can tell we're going into it right now. So on a chart, there are a couple of things I look for. And what I'm looking for, Casey, you know this industry. People are saying, oh, you know, look at some weird esoteric thing that no one's ever heard of, and that's going to be the secret. And
the dark pool?
Well, dark pool is a different thing. But you know, like, you know, magical numbers. Or the planets or something, some kind of mysterious moon cycle. And that's just nonsense. So here are the things that you can see in a chart. First of all, you can see changes in volume. Now, changes in volume, when you see prices rising with increasing volume, this is crude, by the way, but get the concept. When prices are rising and you got massive increase in volume, the pool of stock is not actually changing. There's a word for it. This escapes me. But the actual stock float isn't changing. But what you are seeing is accumulation. And when they're seeing accumulation, while it doesn't affect the stock float, de facto, there are fewer shares being actively traded, even though the float is saying it's all the same. So big changes in volume when the stock is going up and going down is one thing. So big dramatic changes in volume. The second thing that I look for is dramatic price movement as well. Because what happens when a stock, let's say, rises dramatically, particularly if it happens at earnings, is that alerts on trading desks start going all over the place. And from big institutions all the way down to the retail trader. And what's happening there is they go, whoa, hang on, this stock just went up by 30%. Why aren't we on board? Or why aren't we on board enough? Let's have a look and see if we're missing something here. Now, you very rarely find, well, you very often find, rather, the stock that goes up a lot and then consolidates will then go up even more on the next leg up. So I'm looking for actual stocks that have already started to make their move. And if it did it with volume, I've now got two of my big money footprints in play. The third big money footprint that I look for is whether a stock has crossed a key level, a sensitive level. And again, I'm talking about eyeballs, where a stock has gone through a level that is going to trigger alerts on trading desks. Now, the most obvious one is the 200-day moving average. Now, of course, not every stock that passes through the 200-day moving average is going to then continue. Okay, let's be clear on that one. It's not a crude indicator, but the ones that cross and stay crossed and have other things going on have a very good chance, if other things are going on, of then, provided they break out, of continuing to break out. And this is what we found in benign market conditions. So there's my third big money footprint. So accelerating volume, or recent accelerating volume. I want recent price move, corroborating that. And I also want a recent cross and hold of a key level, whether it's a 200-day, 50, 20, but those kind of things. But simple stuff, nothing particularly complicated. However, that's only three. There's another couple. So there's another thing we call, what we call at Wise Traders, shrinking retracements. And I'll try my best to describe these because these you cannot filter for. So you're familiar with, let's call it a reverse head and shoulders setup?
Right, yes.
Right. So imagine what you're seeing. You got a move down and a move, a big move down. Move down and then a retracement up. Then a smaller move down, and then a big move up again. I'm going to try and do this again. It's a very difficult thing to explain, let me tell you. You know the shape of a reverse head and shoulders, right?
Yes, I know what it is.
But don't think of it as a reverse head and shoulder. You get the move down, number one, quite a big move.
Okay.
And then we get a retracement up. Yeah. Then you get another big move. Then you get another move down, but it's less in size than
right.
the previous move. So selling volume or selling pressure might, at this point, just might be easing off. Stock moves up again, and then you get one last move down. And that move down is less proportionally than the two moves before. Now, what that's going to often show up as is a reverse head and shoulders. It's not a reverse head and shoulders. It's shrinking downward movements, which means particularly if the upward movements have been growing with that within that pattern, it means that selling pressure is easing off and it's being subsumed by buying pressure.
Is the volume still moving up at this point?
Well, if you've got that as well. So we have a situation where we can see four, the big money footprints and even that one as well. And let's just say that the final move up is, you've got the final move down, then it goes up through a key level, consolidates, and then I've got my fourth big money footprint waiting for you as well, which is my options analysis. Well, then what you have is a full house. So there are many, and if you're patient enough to allow these things to materialize on your chart and filter for them, the only thing I cannot filter for is this shrinking retracements thing, because it could be happening over weeks or months. If you're patient enough to just make your trading that, then the rewards are enormous, as we've seen many times with our members. Now, there's one other big money footprint that I didn't mention, and that is the one based on options analysis. So that is my OVI, my options volatility indicator. And with that one, what we're looking for is pricing anomalies and, again, volume open interest anomalies as well within the options data. And it's quite different to what people might think. And the only way really to get stuck in there is to just observe the data for a long time, which is what I did. What we then did was we made that into a quantitative setup, a quantitative portfolio setup. So just if you want to have the the summary of all that, the four big money footprints that I'm looking for are volume, recent volume acceleration, one way or the other, recent price acceleration, up or down, going past a key level, like a 200-day or a 50-day moving average, and the OVI being very clear that there is an option skew, bullish or bearish. Now, in addition to that, if I can get a consolidation for risk control, I'm very happy. If that consolidation is also happening with shrinking volume, I'm even happier, because that shrinking volume within the consolidation means that, let's say it's a bullish one, it means that there's not much selling pressure at that point. There's not much appetite for the price to go down. And then on top of all of that, if I can have a sort of more, a broader shrinking retracements set up as well within all that, then I have a really good feel for a stock that is, from a bullish point of view, where the buyers are starting to take over from the sellers. And then I want to play on their team. And that's, I hope, it. Difficult to articulate without drawing stuff.
You did an amazing job. I think I'm getting this. I'm going to be taking notes. And for everybody that's listening, we're going to be, we don't do a full transcript, but what we do is we put bullet points of some of the key areas so you can read the key thoughts.
I can give you some annotations to sort of splice on top.
We could
well.
Do that. Would be very good. Willie, we can throw that in there. If you're listening, you'll want to check the description out, because Guy's going to send us some annotations.
Yeah, I'll do that, because that'll bring it to life somewhat. And by the way, all those big money footprints to follow big money, especially when you're talking about options, because that's, we're looking at big movements in the options activity, is all part of the entire structure, which is the three master keys of trading. And that is market timing, stock selection — within stock selection is the big money footprints — and then trade management, which we touched on a little bit. Okay. And that's the system.
Okay. I always like to just kind of break things down to try to get a little bit of understanding here. So do you also look at anything like institutional ownership? Is that important for your stock entries?
It's not something we've gone particularly far into. I know that there are studies that suggest there's an optimal sort of tipping point of institutional ownership that, you know, I haven't gone into it, to be fair.
Okay. I was just curious. In my mind, I always thought, well, if the big money people are willing to put money into it and the big hedge funds, then they've done their research. I can kind of piggyback off of what they've done.
That is true. But you see, once one goes out, but also you can't tell which ones are in it from the options point of view.
Right.
So yeah. That information is not available.
So do you primarily trade options?
Yeah. And by the way, very simply as well, typically deep in the money, or I'll do something a little more fancy, deep in the money, loads of liquidity. And also what we've discovered is this. So imagine you've got a very, very volatile stock, a new one of these meme stocks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the options would be very cheap or very expensive with one of those?
I think they'd be expensive.
They are. And you typically, in some of them, don't even get any leverage from the get-go. And so you're really, and they're not as liquid and all that. And so what we have discovered over time is that, you know, if Apple, say, is setting up nicely, or Advanced Micro Devices, or, and they're really setting up like a plum, you're often going to get 4 or 5 times leverage multiple right from the very beginning of that trade. And if it starts to go your way, then your leverage multiple will increase. And it's a far more technical stock. And so your probabilities of profiting in a smooth and predictable way are far more with those kind of stocks, those kind of established stocks. Now, of course, we can get excited by Tesla. I mean, Tesla's options actually aren't that expensive, but it's a wild ride with Tesla. So what you'd find is that, and what we have found amongst our members is the ones that stuck to very liquid stocks with very liquid options found that they could trade some fairly, dare I say it, boring setups, but they get great leverage on them as well. And with great odds, typically 7 or 8 out of 10. And that's where they're getting their edge. That's why we have people doing 15x, you know, in 30 months and 8x in 9 months and that kind of thing. And so if you don't go with the crowd, don't be seduced by the drama, you can find there's some really easy pickings out there.
So when you're buying options, are you typically just buying calls, deep in the money calls? And if that's the answer is yes, how do you manage your risk on those? Because options can be pretty risky.
That's, well, the perception is you can, it's pretty risky. So there's a couple of ways that you can do that. First of all, we're not buying crazy, we're buying deep in the money. So we're basically just got a proxy for the stock and we use the same trading plan. Okay. Tight consolidations with setups with big money footprints and all the other things are there. We're obviously taking account of market timing as well. So market conditions, you know, right now are very bumpy, very difficult. So we're scaling right down at this point in time. When market conditions are more smooth and more predictable, less news orientated, then we'll crank it up again. And obviously what you'll find is the setups start to appear again. So we do, part of the risk management process is not being particularly busy at difficult times in the markets. So when do you want to go out and sail, in a smooth waters or in choppy waters? Well, for me, it's smooth waters every time. I get seasick anyway. So that's, you know, that's a good analogy for me. So you manage it in exactly the same way, but your probabilities are so much higher when you do it this way. So you are shooting at 7 or 8 out of 10, some people getting better than that. And you are being discerning about what kind of overall trading conditions you're in. Now, there are ways to mitigate risk. You can go into a deep in the money, medium term option, say 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months away, and you can sell premium as well to offset some of that as well. You can even sell premium quite far away and still get quite a decent back, quite a decent amount back, while not really prejudicing your upside too much either, because it's so far out the money what you're selling. But otherwise, you're relying on your setup, market conditions, and your high probability of success.
Okay. And so then what is the specific strategy that you use to know that when a trade is not working? How do you get out? How do you keep that risk in place? You get stopped out. So, yeah.
I mean, most of the time you get stopped out when you're feeling a little insecure. And by the way, we do from time to time. If a stock has broken out and come straight back in, you might just get out with a pretty much a scratch trade, because again, we're dealing with very liquid options with, you know, only pennies between the bid and the ask as well. So we're not suffering too much on the spread. That's the other mistake that people make when buying options on meme stock type things, is the spread is enormous. The bid ask ratio is, you know, 12% if you're lucky.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
How do you make sure you're getting the best spreads?
Well, we only go with stocks that have a low bid-ask spread, so I can filter for that. And so I filter for low bid-ask ratios.
And that's because you're using also primarily very liquid stocks with lots of movement.
With liquid options, that's right. You just Well, you know, this is the funny thing. You don't, I mean, you'd be amazed. I mean, do you know how much leverage you'll get on an IWM deep in the money option?
I don't know.
About 6 or 7 leverage multiple from the get-go.
Right.
In normal
and as conditions. It moves in your favor, does that increase, right?
And as you get in more profit, that leverage multiple increases. Now, you know, there are times, I mean, we were short the IWM as it hit, as it bumped into and then crossed back through its 200-day moving average recently. So it bumped up against it and then came right back down. And then not only did it do that, it went and bumped its head against it again. It gave us another chance. And that was a very easy trade to make for various reasons, mainly because my options indicator wasn't corroborating with the upside. And that made for a, you know, very easy trade based on a key level for that particular index, the 200-day moving average. But the leverage you can get on those, particularly when you're going long with calls, is extraordinary. So you can be very fussy, very, very picky.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So with all of this that you've gotten, all of this education, all of this success in the markets, tell me a little bit about what you have built over the years and how you have how that's developed.
Like, well, everything we
education
do,
education and all of that.
Well, the starting point is, as you probably kind of guess from what I was saying earlier, everything has to be tested. We have a proper testing rig. So the problem that you have in with retail applications, with brokers and other applications, is that every testing rig will give you what's called an overfitted model. And overfitted will give you great results with your seen data, and then it all collapses once you have unseen data. So it's very important that you test anything. I say you. If you're in my position, we have to test with proper quantitative analysts and proper quantitative software like MATLAB. So that's out of the reach of most retail. But everything I do is properly tested to institutional grade. And that's why we have our institutional arm as well. So that's that part. So I'm not interested in anything unless A, I can explain it in logic, and B, it then, so it passes the logic smell test, and B, then it's quantitatively viable as well, even if you're going to trade it from a discretionary basis. But of course, you know, what we do is very narrow, I think. You know, I've explained to you our whole trading system even just now. The only difference is when we apply particular option strategies to that particular setup and at particular times. And so obviously I have an array of options strategy software, education, but all of it still has to fit within the premises of the big money footprints and the three master keys. Whether I'm doing bull put spreads, bear call spreads, long calls, diagonal calls, any strategy still has to fit within the confines of the plan and the system and the structure that I mentioned earlier. But what that gives us is a tremendous advantage. First of all, there's not much to learn. And you see the logic of what we do anyway. But it means you can trade stocks or options in those parameters. So it's easy to pick up. It's easy to learn. It's very logical and very straightforward. But of course, everything has to be set down in a logical framework, which is easy to learn, loads of examples, not being wise after the event. Yeah, it's very easy to be wise. Oh, I had that one. You know, very easy to be wise.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
We go out there before. Now, we're not giving advice in the retail world, but we will say, look, I think this. And, you know, more often than not, luckily for us, we're right, but it's based on some real sound principles, and that's what we teach. So we're not, you know, Casey, as you know from me, you'll never see me going, oh, I found this revolutionary new thing and everything's changed. It's always been an evolution with us, which is why people stick with us. They like it. You know, it works for them. And we just, you know, I think the important thing as well is to make the software as easy to use, intuitive to use, and getting more and more precise as we go along. So, you know, my methods have evolved, but incrementally. But of course, if you evolve incrementally, in 5 years, you've made quite a
That's slow progress. And that's the thing about slow progress is it adds up really fast.
Compounds.
You think that it's compounding, right? You think that it's no big deal, but most people aren't consistent enough, or they're all over the place. You just got to, what you're really good at is staying focused on one thing and just keep working on that one thing over and over again. You don't have to have 12 systems. You're just going to make the one system that you have the best system that you can possibly build.
Incrementally better. And you know, it's funny because, you know, as you alluded to earlier, there are characters and they always reinvent themselves. And they now found the next best thing. And actually, you know, we actually have I have a webinar and I call it better than the next big thing, because the next big thing is typically not very good.
Yeah. So I am curious, though, with your really tight filter, sometimes with a very tight filter like that, there might not be a lot of setups, which is fine, because why trade it if it's not there? Well, you don't need to force it, right? But during this year where we had quite a strong bear market, did that challenge you guys at all? How did you handle it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, in a year like, well, there's two answers to that. First of all, in the filters that I've created for myself that I then share with my members, I have degrees of filters. So I have one, I have one filter called, and I basically save the filters. You can then use them. You click a button and the shares pop up, or you can adapt them and make them into your own as well. So people I found like to take ownership of what they do. They're like, I'm smarter than him, and great. You know what? And I like them coming back with their ideas. I mean, the amount of good ideas that my members give, it's fantastic, and it helps everybody. But so what I do is I have one, say, big money footprints relating to four big money footprints relating to, say, the 200-day average. And then there's another one relating to the 50-day moving average. And then I do another one which says three big money footprints. So I drop one of the filters, because sometimes you get a great setup and one filter has just been avoided by fractions. You know, the algorithm has to start and stop somewhere. So I have degrees, and in more challenging market circumstances, then of course those looser those parameters or filters with looser constraints work, you know, will start to fill in with more trades. So if you want to be busy, you can be, but of course in a market like this, the quality will suffer. Most people can trade in a bullish market, although it's amazing how many people cannot. But in a market like this, you have to be a bit more on your toes. And, you know, one of the things that I say a lot is, look, you know, don't be a headless chicken, be a lion. Now, a lion spends quite a bit of time just, you know, surveying, just making sure he's not going to chase after every antelope, because the antelope's quicker than the lion. And so there's no need to chase after everything. Once you see how this works, being discerning and really, really being tight with what you do, you don't need to trade all the time. And I'll give you an example. Our best members, the ones with the best results, and these results are outlandish, average around one trade per week on average, which means that some weeks they don't even do anything. Now think about that. Is there being lions, not headless chickens? And what's interesting is that we converted them from headless chickens. They transitioned into lions and lionesses. So, you know, I've seen it done so many times, but it's not about quantity. It is about quality.
Okay. Well, so basically you teach people how to trade, but really what you're doing is building lions.
Yeah. And that's the only way, because, you know, you can go in a benign market and very quickly scale up your account very quickly. If the market's reasonably smooth, if the setups are there, and you don't even, you know, because some of these stocks aren't even going up very much, you know, 10%, you're sometimes getting 4x on that, 5x, or even 6. So because they've got very liquid stocks with very liquid options and with very low implied volatilities, even when they're deep in the money. And remember, when you go deep in the money, you're not taking any time decay risk or very little time decay risk. So you're literally just proxying for the stock.
You're giving yourself a greater edge. Now, the reason that it's that way is because you have to pay more. And so a lot of people don't want to pay that to go deep in the money, but it's worth it because of the edge that they're getting.
You do. And also we call it smart leverage because, you know, out of the money, I mean, let's talk about two scenarios with a lot of leverage. Crazy stock, out of the money, 5 days left to go to expiration. Lots of leverage.
Lots of risk. That's almost like a throwing your money away.
Yeah. And by the way, there are people, there are educators out there saying this is what you should do. Now, think of this one. Stock with loads of liquidity, could still be in tech, you know, something like an Apple or a Microsoft, setting up perfectly, low implied volatility, cheap options, great setup. That's smart leverage. So you go deep in the money with anything, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months to go, and you're still going to get the juice, but with a far easier stock to trade.
Right. Make it easy. Oh, this is good. Yeah, this is definitely good and unique. I don't hear too many people talking about buying deep in the money. It usually is the opposite, but it makes sense the way you explain it.
The thing is with deep in the money as well, let's just say you buy deep in the money call. Let's call it 6 months deep in the money, you know, 80 deltas. It's gone up maybe towards a mini resistance point. What you can then do is sell a 1 month out of the money on that one, bring in a bit of income as well, mitigate some of your cost immediately on that one without sacrificing, you know, a big windfall if it were to keep going up, because obviously the shorter term option may expire, or you just buy it back and then do another one. So you can ladder the selling part up as you go, as the stock keeps on getting higher. But if it retraces a bit, but you still want to be long on the trade, then there's two things you can do. You can take some profits and you can sell a premium against it, a higher strike premium, and get with a shorter expiration. So you can be a lot more dynamic when you buy a deep in the money option. You can start to play with things, mitigate cost, and start to build strategies. And obviously, the software that I first developed after my MBA was doing exactly that. I was able to build strategies. And that was actually the software that I ended up licensing to Euronext Life, who then, happily for me, were then acquired by the New York Stock Exchange. So suddenly the New York Stock Exchange was now my client of 9 years.
Nice. So
I had a little bit of luck there. Because when you say I licensed it to Euronext, they go, who are they? New York Stock Exchange? I know those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know who that is.
Yeah.
Well, Guy, this has been great. A lot to unpack. So I'm sure people are going to listen to this several times and check the description. But there's even more that people need to learn. But, you know, you laid out your system great. But what type of resources are you offering for people that would like to learn more about these quality setups and this type of trading?
On that basis, I have outlined our strategy in full. Very, very simple. Nice, pretty pictures in a free report. And that free report not only gives you the system, but also gives you, well, we call it 5 stocks to watch, but it's more. We always give you about 10. So I'll give you more than what it is, but 5 stocks that look like they're preparing imminently. And hopefully by the time you get it, they'll be setting up, not having flown the nest.
That's excellent. And so it's going to have some information about the stock and also maybe some chart patterns that you're looking at or some potential price movements.
There's only one setup that we really like to look at. So what you'll see is they all look the same. And you'll go, wow, they all look the same. And that's exactly it. One thing to learn here. And you'll learn, they'll have a bit of narrative about the company, a nice picture to bring it to life. But yes, you'll literally be able to see our strategy in action before a stock has made its move.
Okay. Well, how can the people listening get their hands on that?
For that, it's a very simple URL. It's OVI. Just, you don't even need to type a WW or anything like that. Just type in OVI, that's Oscar Victor India, .to/free report. So OVI.to/free report.
Okay. That is OVI.to/free report. And we are going to have that link in the description. Check it out. You'll get 5 stocks, probably more, and you're going to learn a lot. You're definitely going to get more. But more is good. More is
good. Not too many more.
Yeah.
We're not hedging our bets here.
Yeah. They're all going to be really solid analysis. And I really enjoyed talking with you guys. So if you guys were listening, everybody that was listening, go grab that. You can see the type of work. You can see the type of dedication that Guy has put into this, the type of effort. Just learning from him is, you can't learn from too many people that know this much about the markets. So highly recommend that you do it. It's a great opportunity for everyone that's listening. And so with that being said, Guy, thank you for being on the show. This has been tremendous.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Casey. Sorry, I've been a bit anxious to get all the information out, but I hope that the one thing that comes through from this is that we keep things very logical and therefore we keep it very simple. There's not much to learn here. It's just the logic behind it. And then the ability to find these setups very easily. That's the key. Because what I've found is that if it's not that easy to do, then people won't do it. So you have to make it easy to do.
Right. Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. So you don't have anything to apologize for. It was amazing. I'm definitely going to go back and listen to it again. And I'm going to get the report when it comes out because it's going to be great. So again, thank you. And for everyone that's listening again, it's ovi.to/free-report. Go get it or you'll regret it. But that's it for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you on the next episode of the How to Trade It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to another insightful episode of How to Trade It with Casey Stubbs. We hope you found today's discussion valuable and inspiring. Remember, the road to trading mastery is a continuous one, and your commitment to learning and growing as a trader is the key to your success. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, please reach out to us at podcast@tradingstrategyguides.com. Keep listening, keep learning, and keep trading your way to victory. Until next time.